you know, it was told to me, especially by conventions, they spoke very strongly about the concept of no lust in the head. No lust in the head. And that, for me, was like a little bit fanatic, you know? This idea of not watching porn, I'm into that. This idea of not going to strip clubs, massage parlors, I'm into that. This idea of not touching my schmeckle, I'm into that. But not having lust in my head, that means I'm not allowed to have the second thought. The first thought I was taught is on God. It means if a thought is brought into my head, that God gave me. If I see a pretty woman, a pretty guy, and all of a sudden the feeling is like, wow, what would sex feel like? That initial thought is on God. If I'm by the computer and the first thought is like, wow, I wish I could expose myself on a chat, that's on God. The question is, what do I do with that second thought? How do I transition the second thought, this manure, into fertilizer? And that, for me, is really the turning point in recovery. If I'm going to still live on the fence where I have one foot here and one foot there, I will eventually act out. I will shit in my own pants. I will eventually act out. One foot here, one foot there, I'm on the toilet seat. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to crack. If I really surrender, I really feel my brokenness, my step one, of that I tried this idea of just YouTube a million times and it always ended up with porn. I tried this idea of I'm going to just go onto this app, but I'm not going to. I tried this idea, I'm just going to check out the news. I'm just going to think about my next door neighbor's wife. This idea of I'm just going to do like this my new thing, and that's not going to kill me. That's not going to hurt. Lust in the head is not going to hurt. Then I am screwed. Most people in recovery, if you speak to any guy over an extended period of time of sexual sobriety and recovery, will tell you you have to stop working on lust in the head. If I'm not working on lust in the head, I will eventually act out. And for me, that is so difficult, because when I'm by work, it's like that girl that you just want to say that extra comment, innocent comment to, that if my wife was there, she would knock me on the head, you know? That type of lust is exactly what's going to lead me out. My sponsor has a great line. In the early days, when you go into a jungle and a forest, right, you protect yourself. You bring guns and you bring ammunition. You protect yourself from the animals, right? At one point, once you have all your protection, you know what happens? You put your guard down and you're ready to live life, right? If an animal comes, you shoot it. You forget to bring off. You forget to bring the little thing that a mosquito just, one little thing, and boom, you are effed. Dead, literally. Dead, a stupid little mosquito. My sponsor talks to me about this. We talk about this. It's like, of course I'm not going to a strip club anymore. I mean, you know, a massage parlor, porn, you know, bottom line behavior. A nipple over here and over there never hurt anybody, you know what I mean? Like a little lust, a joke that could be interpreted in a joke form, or it could be really be me getting a high off lust. The average guy does not stay sexually sober if he doesn't work on this. Really, tensely, intuitively, and recognize that I have an allergic reaction to peanuts. If I want the reaction, if I don't want the reaction, if I ask for the reaction, if it got... If there's a peanut, and I go into its room, I will feel that shake. No matter what, I have an allergic reaction. So even in my mind, that is the key to step one. And I think it's very important to bring this all the way to step four. When we come into a program, I heard a lot of my messages from going to conventions and really speaking to the old-timers. You know what I mean? When it came to basketball, I always used to go after the best ball players, you know, the top guys. That was just my thing. In yeshiva, I always asked for the, like, top guys in yeshiva. By conventions, I always went to the top guys. It was like that type of thing, like, for my low self-esteem and my ego, I needed to always be. So I ran after these top guys, and I asked them, like, how does the program really work? I want this to work. It's not a, like, you know what I mean? It's only life or death. And I remember one of the old-timers mentioned to me this idea of when we come into a meeting, we admit our powerlessness out loud. It's a very, very important concept. When we come into the meeting, we sit down, and sometimes it gets lost in the meeting. We just go around the meeting. Okay, next. Hi, Chaim. Thank you, Chaim. Thank you, David. And you just go around the meeting. Every guy is standing in front of a group of people, and he's admitting, I, Chaim, am a sexaholic. That admission, that it's not like, oh yeah, you went to a massage parlor? Yeah, listen to where I went. You know, it's not a boosting ride. It's not a like a sexologue. It's an admission of, my life is screwed. We're here for a reason. We've done the most insane, crazy, painful stuff that exists in the world. We've wrecked our lives and the lives of others. That admission to come to a group and simply state to everybody, listen, I am Chaim and I am a sexaholic, and these are the insanities that I do. And if I have one thought too long, it could lead to a second, to a third, which could lead to a click, which could lead, which in 2-3 months, my life has been destroyed to smithereens. That is the admission of me coming into the meeting. And it's what I try to do is really to like catch myself in the moment. Not like, thanks for sharing, Chaim, sexaholic, my blah, to really like gear myself, this is my brokenness. This is why I keep coming back after 8 years, where 95% of the people over the course have gone. Because like, to really that the first step, the grave with the blood dripping down, the real admission to my step one. The step two starts really right after that in the program, where after everybody admits the powerlessness, we say the serenity prayer. Don't worry. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That starts my step two and my step three and my step four. The whole rest of the program is looking for serenity which caused my step one. Now, I have no idea what's the difference and what's the wisdom when I am in problems and circumstances. Is it my wife's fault? It's not my wife's fault. Is my business fault? It's not my business. Is it God's fault? Is it my fault? God bless, who and what's fault is it? What am I supposed to do? That's the serenity prayer of don't worry. Yes, I am a broken nut job that's going to destroy my life and the life of everybody that comes into contact with me. But don't worry. There's a serenity. There's hope. There's an existence. And that's my step two. There is a power that will restore my insanity. That power is God. Find them or die. We hear this in the program a lot. I don't believe in God. I don't think the whole thing makes sense with God. I don't like the relationship with God. I have childhood trauma with God, which I had all of them in my process of 8 years. I went through each stage of all these different things. What was told to me was this realization of find God or die. If you have a problem with God, you really have a big problem. You better find to communicate and get a relationship with this man. You might have to go through 6 months of saying, fuck you, and I hate you. You might have to go through a period of time of like screw this whole God thing, but you need to work on it. This idea of like, the whole thing is confusing. Let's go to step four. I really need to find a relationship with my higher power, because that is the only power that will restore me to sanity. Nothing else. I tried everything else. So if this whole relationship is confusing, like my sponsor told me, when I came to the program, I couldn't read. Literally couldn't read the words. He said, well, you better understand this to the Gnostic in the big book. You better build a relationship with your higher power. If you don't, it's really confusing. You're really screwed. Now, your higher power, the relationship with God, might be a power called love. All acceptance. It got to be something. But whatever it got to be, it could be anything but me. But me running my life. And that really leads us into step four. Like we spoke last time, the step four is the fact that I have this huge, painful, deep-rooted disease going on inside of my blood, let's call it, inside of my veins, and it's spreading all over my body, and it's destroying my cells and destroying my body to pieces. And I come to meetings and I put on a Band-Aid. I make phone calls and I put on a Band-Aid on top of that oozing pain, and it starts feeling a little better. It does. I put on some ointment on top of it, starts feeling a little better. Step four is where we say, hey, you know something? Enough with this shit. Enough with this faking this thing out. Let's open it up. Let's get real surgery going on. Let's dig deep inside and let's clean this out. Literally, clean this out. There is something so bad and so terrible in there, and I constantly need to clean it out. And that's where the feeling and healing starts. The program says that most people who do not do the fourth and fifth step will act out. Abe Tversky says that the reality is doing a fourth and fifth is greater than $100,000 by a therapist. So the fourth is like a free gift from God of learning how to really live life. For me, the way I worked my fourth step is, yes, I wrote all the checks, which we'll do in a second together as a group. But what it did for me was, this is how my phone call changed in recovery. My phone call used to be, I hate my wife, I'm angry. How dare she do this to me? What does it mean? I'm not going to work. It's so pathetic. I hate God. What is going on? I don't know. And then the other guy would say, I feel your pain and it must be so difficult. Just keep going on. You're really a good guy and God loves you no matter what. You know, all these beautiful, beautiful concepts would keep going on, right? It would be like totally amazing, totally inspirational, right? The reality is that what would happen right then and there, what would happen is right then and there would be the I put a nice Band-Aid over it, but inside it's still festering. So later on when I take that action of loss, it's like, what's going on? The change of the phone calls were like this. I'm furious and I'm angry at my wife, angry at my father, I'm angry, I hate it, I have so much fear. How am I gonna pay my bills? Please give me feedback of what's my problem. What do I need to do to change? How do I change? What's my part in it? Where do I go with all these feelings and emotions? For example, right now, right? Live time, right? There's a question, I don't know if it's working still or not. It's working? Right? For a second, I didn't know if it was working, right? Right away, the first feeling that came up for me is that fear. Oh my gosh, there were people that couldn't make it today that wanted. Like, oh my gosh, like, how stupid was I? Because I, myself, and I should have checked it. And look, why didn't you guys check it? That's all going on in my head while I'm talking. Active, live. Okay. Let's say it wasn't working. So I would walk away from this whole meeting and everything resentful. Chaim, what's your part in it? First of all, realize it's your ego. A, recognize that there's a God that can take care of it. B, recognize, hey, didn't you give your will and your life over to the care of God that he should build with you the way he wishes? If he wanted this to be recording, wouldn't it have been recording? C, okay, what could I do about it different? Don't beat yourself up. This is a beautiful learning experience. The next time, before you talk, spend 2 seconds and actually check the thing that it's recording. Hey, Chaim, where's that pattern in your life? Have you ever got into the car and all of a sudden you're getting into a fight with your wife of, hey, we forgot to put in gas. You were supposed to put in gas. No, I was supposed to. Chaim, don't you see this pattern in your life? You forgot to sign checks this week. Your factory guy came over to you and he told you that you forgot to sign checks. Do you see a pattern in your life where you're just not being responsible and you're shifting blame on your wife that the floor is going to get done, your father for not calling, the gas in the car? And all of a sudden it's like, I need to change. This is how it changes. And then to take a step back and say, wow, I wouldn't have even been able to give this example if this didn't just happen. Thank you, God, for showing me the way. The transformation of the way I used to think, even that it's working, I would have gotten angry at, of course it should be working. Like,
yeah, I didn't want to get embarrassed.
To be able to just change the whole concept of life, and that's really what step four is. So, of course, by coming to meetings, I'm going to gain a tremendous amount because you hear a lot of healthy and good talk. And making phone calls, you're going to change. The transformation, the real change that goes on inside of my body happens by this, by the actual step work, by making the phone call different than it used to be, by coming to meetings and when I admit my powerlessness, it's not just like, okay, next guy, next guy, next guy, but rather bringing in that spirituality of recognizing like, oh my gosh, I'm really a broken guy. I really need to get to another meeting tomorrow or even later today. This, my whole life should be revolved around recovery. Not this my life, and then there's recovery, and if it happens to work together, so I will make it fit. But if it doesn't, then I won't. The reality is, everybody should please just try to remember that most of us don't make it. Most of us don't make it. Most of us have fallen after 2, 3, 4, 5 years in recovery. And the people who I've gotten so much experience, strength, and hope from in recovery have fallen. And it's sad. It's sad. All those people are gone. And we don't want to be the same. Our lives could change and we can become better. The fourth step is the real starting point if we bring in God into it. So now to bring it just to the fourth step, I would recommend whoever, everybody has a fourth step? Or?
I have a good one.
Okay. So basically, you should read this. It is very, very good stuff. Just honestly, I need to read it for my humility. That's why I needed to read it. You know, because my genius brain is like, okay, I got this whole thing. This is just like the manual when you get a new phone. You don't read through the book, so I don't got to read through this either. But really, on your own time, you should read through it. We just don't have the time now. But in simple terms, to make this very, very simple, and I'm forever grateful for my sponsor, Rafal and Harvey, for showing me the simplicity of the program and now making it complicated. The whole idea of step four is giving my will over to the care of God. How this works, you could come up with reasons why this works. But the main thing is it works because God said, just do this and you'll see the outcome. You'll just be rocketed into a different dimension. So let's just basically start. I guess that's the idea. You could shut this. And the basic idea is just to take out a pen and paper and to start. I am resentful at. Just list the names of people, institutions, or